Good afternoon, everyone. Who here has heard of clout? Most people. Who's heard of cred? Not a bad number there. So what I want to do is not just talk about cred today, because that would be a product pitch. I'd like to leave you with some thoughts about where influence fits in the B2B space. Now, influence is a really controversial topic, because what we're doing and our competitors are doing is we're giving each of you a number. Now, years ago when I was working back in Australia, someone left the salary sheet on the photocopier of the place I was working. For months afterwards, there was real tension because people were saying, how come you're worth more than me? I should get paid more because I, whatever. Now in 2012, when we're giving everyone that uses social media publicly a number, people will say, why have you got that number? Why has someone got that other number? And I think we actually suffer from a bit of this score myopia where people are fixated on scores. So I wanted to peel back the whole notion of what your cred or clout score is and talk about where influencer and influencer marketing fits in the mix. And what I want to talk about is going from this notion of likes to using influence in purchase decisions. Years ago, when influencer marketing didn't really exist, there was a great white paper brought out by Ogilvy and Ascision, actually to do with mobile advertising, that looked at what was going to happen in 2020. And they talked there a lot about peer advocacy. And I think peer advocacy and influence are the same sort of things. And I'll talk a bit more about that as well. I always start with this slide, no matter where I'm presenting, because I believe that we have been conditioned to, when we go to work, behave in a certain way. And we're very adept at behaving normally. We all came out from coffee. A number of you are talking to each other. In fact, what I do when I go to events is I actually try and work myself into a new group of people. So I go up to two people that I don't know, and I see how long it's going to take before they let me into the conversation. And recently, the worst or the longest was 7 minutes. I was literally standing there for 7 minutes waiting for that moment that I could inject and say, that's an interesting point. But this is social media. You have to wait until you've got something relevant to say. Now, if I was a brand, and what we all do when we go back to our desks, is I would go straight in and say, hi, I'm from Cred, and you need to use our product because we're the best. To which those two people would probably tell me that that's the door, and to go away, you're a loud, obnoxious Australian. But what I do as a human being and now as a brand on social media, I have to wait for that right time to add value. So every time a client says to me, we just need more likes, or we just need to use social media as another marketing channel, I scream, because the world has changed. And ladies and gentlemen, it is a scary world because we have been programmed to market and promote things in one way, yet in real life we do things in another way. What I'm going to show you next is a 90-second video from a hilarious BBC Three production called The Revolution Will Be Televised. And I think this 90 seconds actually sums up the way that most brands treat us on social media these days. Let's just rewind it because seeing it this fast isn't as useful as when we see it in normal speed. Here we go.
Hi, guys.
Hiya.
Can I be your friend? Can I be your friend?
Yeah.
All my friends have got, like, you know, like 1,300 friends.
I've only got 99.
But it's cool to have a lot of friends. Isn't it good to have... Do you want to maybe look at some photos of, like me with my mates and maybe, like, want to be my friend more? If I showed you some pictures of my life, it's really cool, you'd be a bit more interested. Sorry, I just spoke to you. Can I just poke you? Can't poke you? Just go away. This is when, like, all my really cool friends, like, threw a party for me, and it was really cool, and I had a really good time. I looked really good. This is like me at a cool party with, like, pretty girls looking cool. This is my friends, like, playing this really cool game. You don't find shiny your first to strangers. What's wrong with you? No, thank you.
So So we laugh, but that's how a lot of us actually treat people on social media. It's all about getting lots of likes, and the person with the biggest score gets all... It's just wrong. I don't think any time soon we'll change that behaviour. When I dusted off my old MBA marketing textbook, it had nothing about engagement, nothing about two-way communication. The internet was one revolution. Social media, I think, is the next, because now it gives you and I, the consumer, a chance to talk back. The challenge is that the poor brands out there are not quite sure what to do, and we could spend another whole conference on what's happening there. So we're here to talk about influence, but no matter who you ask, everyone has a different definition of influence. Now, this is from one of the online dictionaries, the capacity to have an effect on the character, development, or behavior of someone or something. Okay, that's one definition. Brian Solis, who is a great a friend of Cred, says the influence is the ability to cause desirable and measurable actions and outcomes. We've got to measure it. I like that one. What we say is influence is the ability to inspire action and is the measure of what others do because of you. Lots of different definitions there. Really what it means is how do we find people that will talk about us in a nice way and hopefully not for too much money. We all have influence somewhere. In fact, in this room, in fact, what you're looking at here is a live leaderboard of anyone that's mentioning the SMW B2B hashtag, and I'll talk about this in a moment. But what I'm doing here is I'm actually ranking this community in front of me in real time. And we think there is influence everywhere. Everyone in this room has influence in some way. In fact, there's someone in this room that recently influenced me, and I'll explain why. We think every voice is important. It doesn't matter what your cred or clout score is. Each of you has a passion and expertise in an area that can benefit other people. And our main influencers are everyday friends and people. So events like this one bring together communities. Everyone on that leaderboard is either here or in the community talking about this particular talk today. Who knows who this is? That's one person. They've just spent $700,000 giving Scarlett Johansson a bottle of Moët to promote it. But what they also did is had to tell us at the top right that it was her. Brands are getting really tired of having to use celebrities to promote things. And we all know about our other friend, Kim Kardashian. Nothing against what she's doing. She's entitled to earn some money. I just wouldn't actually use the product she promotes because here's her tweeting a picture, not the car, a picture of the latest Mercedes-Benz, and then it jumps into mainstream media, or at least the Mail Online, and talks about what Kim Kardashian is tweeting about. Companies I'm working with are saying, Andrew, we are really, really tired of having to use celebrities to promote products. First of all, it's pretty obvious they've been paid. The next level down are paid bloggers, and one of my clients says, we're sick of paying paid bloggers £5,000 a month just to write nice stuff about us, because eventually they become like celebrities. Andrew, they ask me, how can you find normal people who have a passion for a subject and have a community and a voice and people listen to them? Because I no longer look at advertising. When I make purchase decisions, I go to my network. If it's a pain decision like a new phone, a new car, a new insurance policy, I want to find someone who has suffered that pain before and can tell me honestly whether it's a good or bad experience. I won't get that from advertising. I certainly won't get that from a celebrity or a paid blogger. So I go to my network. I've actually been influenced recently. I was speaking to someone in this room, who will become obvious very soon, about some new technologies. And he was talking about a new thing called Dispatch by the team at Connectify. Now, Connectify is a great little piece of software that allows you to use a hotspot on your laptop. So if you go to a hotel, it only gives you one Wi-Fi code. You can run everything off that. And then bringing out a new technology to allow you to group all these things together and give you faster internet. And it was Neville Hobson, and I was speaking on the phone. As a result of the discussion I had with Neville, who was not paid by Dispatch or Connectify, he said, you should really look at this. And I plumped down $65 to buy it on the basis of Neville's recommendation. So Neville influences me. Last time I looked, he's not a celebrity. He's a well-respected blogger. I don't know that you get paid lots of money to blog, certainly not £5,000 from companies, but you also disclaim it. But Neville is in my network, and I trust what he says. So if Neville said, this piece of technology is really cool, you should look at it, I'm going to believe him. And I think what's happening more and more is that people are turning to their trusted networks. Even if you haven't met someone in person, but you know what they're like on social media, you're more likely to actually take their recommendation. So how do we find these Neville Hobsons who can influence the buying decision of Andrew Grill? Who knows what happened on October 29th, 2011? More information? First clue. Second clue. Third clue. Anyone want to hazard a guess? That was the day that Qantas Airways grounded every single one of their planes worldwide. 83,000 people were grounded because Qantas were in dispute with their three unions. And so Jeff Dixon, their CEO, said, I'm going to ground every single Qantas plane. And he did. And it was pretty horrific for those involved. The second of the part of the story is that he also sent the social media team home. So if you tweeted Qantas Airways, you got nothing. So 83,000 people were actually literally stranded. What happened 3 weeks later was the geniuses at Qantas PR decided to do a bit of a campaign on social media called Qantas Luxury. And the case study is there. If you go to lc.tl/QL, you can read all about this. What they decided to do was give away a first-class pair of pyjamas. Thought I was going to say trip there, didn't you? For the best hashtag Qantas Luxury story. And so what happened, of course, is the hashtag was taken over by people that were a little annoyed still 3 weeks ago their plane was delayed. And what we did, this is an example of negative influence. We went through and looked at retweet acceleration. And we saw what happened in the first few moments of that and who were the antagonists. And guess what? Three of them were union activists. Quite rightly, having a go at Qantas for saying, you know, you haven't got your act together yet and you're doing these stupid competitions. So we actually looked at their credentials. We could see what they were influential in. We actually emailed Jeff Dixon who said, we said, you should actually do a press conference in your pajamas saying that we made a mistake here. And my point here is that you can actually find who these antagonists are and you should know who they are so that if something goes wrong, at least you can call upon them. And this is my favourite cartoon we wrote from an actual tweet. Kevin Richardson said, hashtag Qantas Luxury, somewhere in Qantas HQ, a middle-aged manager is yelling at a Gen Y social media expert to make it stop. So influence can be used in two ways. One, to find out who the negative influences are. Now, maybe you can't change their opinion, but at least if you know who they are and the fact they are union activists, they're more likely to behave that way. That's maybe a crisis management strategy. So what we've done at CRED, we're actually, as Larry Ellison says, eating our own dog food. We've set up a worldwide group of CRED leaders. In fact, Mark Schaefer, who was here before, is one of the CRED leaders. These are unpaid people that we've selected from around the world who have real influence in their communities around the world. All we've done is be nice to them. We sent a few of them to San Francisco to meet each other a few months ago. What has happened, though, is that every time they talk about CRED, we're getting in major publications and we're getting major coverage because we have identified these people. They like what we're doing. They're in a community of other people, and we've engendered some real trust between them. So for no payment, because we can't pay people that say nice things about us, they've decided that we're actually a pretty good bunch of people with a nice story, and so we're getting some coverage like that, which is fantastic. Now, what about positive influence? One of my favourite stories is a guy called Stephen Bynum, who I used to work with in Australia, was at the Dillon Hotel in Ireland, and his hot water ran out. Now, why he didn't go to the front desk, I don't know. This is actually 3 or 4 years ago. Read from the bottom. No hot water in the Dillon Hotel this morning. Can you believe it? So he tweeted, and guess what? He got a letter back saying, we're very sorry about that. But my story here is that you know, he got back to the hotel. The letter was there. He's impressed with the hotel. He's now become an influencer for that hotel. And when he talks about the Dillon Hotel, he can confidently say, these guys actually fix problems. I had a similar experience. I was going to the Mark Hopkins Intercontinental in San Francisco, a lovely hotel, and I very cheekily tweeted on the way there, first time in San Francisco, can you give me a room that shows off your wonderful view? I expected nothing. This is before CRED existed. They weren't looking at any sort of CRED score. They tweeted back, we'll see what we can do. So I turned up at the Intercontinental Mark Hopkins on a Friday night, tired from my trip from Seattle, and greeting me at the front desk, Mr. Grill, thank you so much for your tweets. We've upgraded you to a suite. And we'll give you free internet for the weekend so you can tweet or blog about your experience if you'd like to. Now, what's happened is one good turn deserves another. I know I got something of benefit from them. I had a great time, and I blogged about it. And the blog on the subject is now used as a training aid for the Intercontinental Hotels Group globally to show what happens when you actually do things for other people. I also believe that the hospitality industry is the model that we need to look towards because in the hospitality game, it is never a problem. You go to the front desk, I'm having a problem, Mr. Grill, we'll upgrade you, we'll sort it out. In the real world, though, we always have a problem. We can't do that. Policies preclude that. So look at what hospitality groups have been doing for 30, 40, 50 years to make things better. In fact, on this blog post, the picture there is not actually Mark Hopkins. This is back in 2005, rather. The Canberra Hyatt. My wife and I were there, and too hard to explain what happened. Answer is, they upgraded us to the presidential suite because of the problem they had caused. Now, I now tell everyone, including several years later, that I had a great time. There were 17 rooms, grand piano. We were just photographing each other in all the rooms. It was fantastic. And this is before Twitter, before cred, before clout. I had no one to tell. So it's a delayed tweet telling you all that the hospitality industry is a really great model, and when they get things right, you naturally want to say how wonderful the experience was. Now, Mark's not here, but he's written a fantastic book called Return on Influence, and he looks at seven areas of why influence matters, and these are authenticity. Are you authentic by what you're saying? If I was here talking about cutting meat for a party, you'd say, well, you have no credibility in that sort of space. Likeability. You may like me, you may not, but you're more likely to show me some credibility. And also in Neville's case, I like him a lot. So if he says something, I'm going to believe him consistently. Neville's always talking about things in this space. He's not talking about car racing, then rocket ships. He's consistent. So I can see that his influence matters because he's in the same spot. Scarcity. Sometimes you don't want to give everything something that's available. So to be influential as a blogger, I like to get stuff that is sort of first release, and then it's scarce, and then it shows that there's some influence there. Social proof. Talk to Mark afterwards about this. It's a really interesting concept. If we're all standing outside a room and there are lots of people outside, you'll go, oh, what's that room? That looks really interesting. What happens is people use likes and follows as social proof. If someone has a million followers, they must be really important. But as we all know, you can buy followers. For $5 on a website called Fiverr, you can have 20,000 Twitter followers overnight. And so if someone's got lots of followers, does that mean they're influential or just really great at forking out $5 to buy things? He also talks about reciprocity, which I never get right, about one good turn deserves another, and that's the example of me blogging about the hotel. And content. Is your content actually really relevant and useful? In Neville's case, it is. And I like reading his stuff, and he has influence over me because he actually ticks all those seven boxes. Here's actually a picture of Mark with his book. This was the day the book came out. How's this for influence? I'd been at his publisher half an hour before. Mark had not actually received a copy of his own book. I presented him with a copy of his own book. I tweeted a picture of this photograph, and to date there have been more than 3,000 people who have looked at that photograph, interested to see what it was that Andrew and Mark were doing in New York. So, you know, it's really interesting how this stuff spreads. Now, what is this thing over here, the leaderboard? Cred's an interesting company. We've had access to the Twitter firehose since 2008, direct access. We don't go through a third party. We are direct into Twitter servers. It means that since November 2008, we've collected, stored, and indexed every single public tweet. Anyone want to guess how many tweets we have in the database? It's a big number. Anyone? Try 130 billion, and growing at the rate of probably 10 to 20 billion a month. Lots of tweets. We also get it in real time. So since I've been speaking, I've actually crept up the leaderboard. This is a leaderboard about this community. It's not my cred score. It's this community here. So people talking about speakers from this morning, we're rising up the chart because we're becoming more influential because you're talking about us. On the right-hand side here, Thomas is at number one because he's being super generous. He's mentioning other people. That means that you can actually have two ways of looking at this whole question of influence. And in fact, in this particular case, it's not just the person with the biggest score. So why do you, as a brand or an individual, need to worry about these influences? Now, Anthony stole my thunder about the consumer decision journey. It's so good, you're going to hear about it again. But it is actually a piece of work from 2009. It's even more relevant now in 2012 because it breaks down the old way that consumers find you and your brands and products and the new way. So we all know the old way, awareness, familiarity, consideration. That doesn't exist anymore. This loyalty loop, another version of it here. The consideration and evaluation is now heavily impacted by social media because, as I said before, if I want to get advice on a product, I do not read ads. I don't see the Scarlett Johansson thing. I go and ask my network or read what my network are doing. So in that consideration and evaluation phase, social media weighs very, very heavily. Once you've bought it and you enter that loyalty loop, the example here is with the Connectify software, I'll keep buying stuff from them because I love it. You'd actually argue that the Apple fanboys and girls are in that loyalty loop. It doesn't matter what they do or how bad the mapping application is, we'll keep coming back and buying it. So what you want to do is find people, one, that will actually influence in the consideration evaluation set. You then want to find those that are in the loyalty loop, and we'll keep talking about it. And finding those people can be very, very advantageous because they may not be paid spokespeople, they may not be paid bloggers, they might be real people like Neville and myself that actually use the product. The other thing about influence is if I recommend a brand, I'm recommending my brand and myself. Just as Neville is saying, if I went and bought this product and it was rubbish and I blew $65, I'm actually going to blame Neville for recommending it. So in making a recommendation and being an influencer, it is actually a very, very important role. Give you an example. Some years ago, I was a Vodafone influencer. I did a lot of stuff in mobile. And for 12 months, they gave me a free SIM card to do whatever I wanted with. I don't have that anymore. And in fact, after I'd lost access to it, I saw a tweet when I was in Sydney one day from Rory Ketlin-Jones, who's the BBC tech correspondent. Now, Rory is not someone you want to upset, because he'll write about you. And Rory tweeted, "I'm having real problems with my Vodafone broadband. It's 8 o'clock in the morning in Sydney, it's 6 o'clock at night in London, other way around." So I tweeted, "Hey, at Vodafone UK, Ruskin147 is having a problem with broadband." Now, when I did that and I stepped back from it, I thought, wow, I've actually done Vodafone's job for them. I've seen there's a problem because I know he's an influencer and I don't want them to suffer. But by me doing that, I'm actually promoting my brand and saying, if you use Vodafone, you'll hopefully have a good experience. So I'm no longer paid by, I've never been paid by them. I don't have the SIM card anymore. But I will continue to promote Vodafone. I'm a paid up customer. I use them every month. I pay my money. I like what they're doing. So influencers, when you find them, also won't carte blanche fall over and say, I'll promote your product. It's also got to be relevant to them. So how do you measure influence? You have to be really careful with whatever measure you use, whether it's cred or clout, to know what you're measuring and what you're seeing. And the bigger the number isn't always the right person. Let's try an exercise here. Let's imagine that each of you wrote your salary down and put it on a post-it note and stuck it on your head. Now let's imagine for a moment that Neville earns £1 million a year. Just because he has the highest salary in the room, do I rush to Neville about my latest idea? It might be that Neville's actually not the most relevant person, but he's got the biggest number. My fear is that these numbers will become badges of honour, and Neville and I had this discussion about people putting these numbers on their CVs. Recently, Salesforce said, if you want to be a community manager at Salesforce, you have to have a clout score of, I think, above 35 or something. There's nothing wrong with saying that. But if your 35 score is as a result of being influential in car racing, and we're asking you to do a job in social media community management, and you don't know that, that's where it becomes very, very dangerous. So whatever score you use, whatever metric you use, know what you're measuring. So, in fact, I had to change this slide this morning because my cred has gone up. It was 889, and now 890. It keeps going up because people keep talking about me. Please stop it. What it shows here is, though, that my 890 is actually out of 1,000. So that's a fairly good score. On cred above 600, you're in the top 14% of Twitter users. Above 800, you're in the top 0.1% of Twitter users. That 8 number is actually more important. Outreach level. How generous are you? We had a client recently who wanted to find people who were influential in the UK around motorsport because they wanted to send them to the track and have them talk about their experience. So instead of looking for people that just had the high number in the top left, we looked for people who had a high outreach score. Now, in theory, we thought this would work. In practice, it works brilliantly because the agency that were doing the outreach said that when we contacted these people, if they had an outreach score of 8, 9, or 10, they were really, really interested in being involved. If their outreach score was below 5, they didn't really care. So now, you can see a 71, which is my current clout. I don't know what that means. And certainly by seeing that number, it's not telling you much. But if you open up my what we call credentials, and we have one of these on one of 130 million people on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, go to cred.com/ your Twitter name, log in, and you can see your cred score. It shows there what communities I'm influential in. So if I had this on my CV, it says their marketing is my top, is one of my third social media communities I'm influential in. That is important. If I'm going for a marketing job, I'd like to say I have cred, but it's actually in the marketing area. In fact, you know what? If I were to click on that, my marketing number is about 925, but my outreach is only 6 because I don't engage as much with the marketing community. Now, I said before, followers can be bought, and there's a fantastic website from our friends at Status People called Fake Followers, and you can go there by going to lc.tl/fake. You can type in your or someone else's Twitter name, and it runs an algorithm to see whether it thinks that these people are fake. Because, ladies and gentlemen, people buy followers. People buy likes. So you have to be really careful if your metric is how many followers do I have or how many likes do I have? And these will impact every score. And the question is, can't you game these systems like Credit and Cloud? Of course you can. The difference with Cred is that if you're gaming it, you can actually see it being gamed because we have a real-time feed. And back to, if you log on to cred.com, it'll actually show you like, on an activity statement, like a frequent flyer statement, every single tweet and the points awarded. So I can see people gaming Cred in real time. And guess what? If a client says I'd like 100 people that are influential in this space, and I can see that two or three are not playing the game properly, I won't share those people with the client because they're clearly trying to do something that's not really genuine. So a little bit on what is Cred. I mentioned the two scores. The influence score is about inspiring action. The higher the number, the more likely you are to have influence in that space. And the outreach really is about generosity. And so what I often do is get clients to type their own company at name in there, and it reflects how they're seen on social media. So if you were to type at Starbucks in there, you'd see a very high influence and a very high outreach. Some other well-known brands, though, have quite a low outreach because they're not engaging. They might be spewing out messages that are marketing messages, but they're not really engaging and being generous to their people. And we've just launched a thing called Cred Story. This gives you a very visual view of your social media story. This is mine. This is taken from a few moments ago, so we've got things that are happening there. Each one of those panels is clickable. So where you see all these panels there, you can click those and get the analytics behind that. So, of course I'd say this, but we think that Cred gives a deeper view into where your influence comes from and where and why you're influential. But still, we only tell part of the story. I'm not going to magically give you a list of people to say these are the perfect people that you should engage with. It actually does require some sweat and some thought power to go behind that. So let's look at some best practices. I'll also talk about best practice from my own experience as an influencee because of my Vodafone experience, my Mark Hopkins experience. And what really pains me is going into a well-known PR or branding or client agency and saying, how many here have met a blogger? And no hands go up. And I say, but I shook your hand on the way in. I'm a blogger. I've been blogging since 2004. I try these things. I speak from an area of knowledge because I've been doing it. So part of the problem is I can give you these influential people that we believe from a Cred point of view are of interest to you. But unless you know what to do with them, it's a complete waste of time. And so when I say in these meetings, you know, I met you on the way in, I joke about it, we then spend the next half an hour explaining what happens when you find an influencer, what you do, how do you engage with them. And I think, you guys have paid more money than me and you're in a big agency and you don't get this space. It's really, really wrong. It takes time. I can't give you a list of influencers today and instantly they become your best friends tomorrow. It's a relationship. It's in many ways similar to what you do with journalists. You don't expect to ring up a journalist and you need to cover my great release. It's fantastic. You have to work on that and you have to gain trust. So I would never expect to ring Neville and say, hey, Neville, I want you to write about Cred. You know what? I waited for him to come to me to ask about Cred. Did it in a very deliberate, hands-off way, almost as an experiment, because he'd heard about it. He kept saying, I keep hearing about Cred. I want to know more. And I was humble, but also knew that I'd approached in the right way, because with Neville piquing his interest, it means that we've done the right thing. Enough people outside of me are talking about our product. CRM and influence scores. I think, and we're in a B2B workshop, I think the next goldmine is CRM and influence. We've just teamed up with Salesforce.com, so now if you're a Salesforce user, you can actually have Cred inside, and I'll show you that in a minute. And we've had clients coming to us saying, we've got this massive database of people that's opt-in, we know all about them, we only know what we've asked them. We only know what their first name and last name is, and maybe their address, we don't know what they do. So if we're able to wash, with permission, someone's list against Cred and give them a Cred score, we could then find out where they're influential. And when we've done that, clients have gone, my goodness, we actually have the Neville Hobsons of the world in, sorry, I'm picking on all time Neville, but you're in front of me. We have these sort of caliber of people in our database we didn't even know. And we know that they're influential, we know that this is real intelligence. So I think what will happen is companies will try and say, well, if it's a Neville ringing us and he's got a Cred of 900, we'll take his call rather than Andrew, who's only 890. That may happen, but at least you've got some decision points you can make. Please, please employ people that get and do social. Recently been researching a company to go and target them to talk about Cred, and I realized that I can't even find these people on Twitter or Facebook, or they have no real presence. They're invisible. But they're the digital experts in these companies. And I'm thinking, maybe I'm too elitist, but I would expect if you are the digital expert in this company, you actually practice what you preach. So please, please, I don't want to go to any more meetings where people say we've never met a blogger, or we don't blog, or we're not very active on Twitter. In 2007, when I joined Twitter, I thought it was the biggest waste of time ever. But I joined it because people were talking about it. I thought, what's all the fuss about? Now I'm addicted. I have 7,000 plus followers, which actually isn't very many in the scheme of things. But it means I have 7,000 research assistants that give me really interesting insights about what's going on. I know how to use Twitter. I know what works, what doesn't work, only by doing. Mentioned this before, just because Neville earns £1 million a year doesn't necessarily mean he is the go-to person about your latest thing. Take some of these numbers with a grain of salt, understand what the numbers mean, and understand where the number is relevant. So if I have a really low score in mummy bloggers, it's because I'm not a mummy blogger and I'm pretty useless in the mummy blogging community. And transparency. We are the only influencer platform that is transparent. Not only do we actually show the cred score and the points against every single interaction, we also publish our rules. Our competitors haven't really done that yet, and I don't expect they will, because that's not their business model, and I respect that. But if you're using anything, you should know at least somehow how it works so you can actually trust it or not. And you should measure everything. So you found these great influencers, you've sent them the latest widget. Have they talked about the latest widget? Have they actually mentioned the fact that they're engaged with you and they like your product or they don't like your product? So once we've found them, what do we do next? I've given you this brilliant list of influencers. What the heck do I do with them? How do we engage them? Here's a great example of the perfect tweet. Watching eBay Motors BTCC, then end up on eBay buying tools I don't need because I'm seeing text with them. This, for me, is a perfect tweet because someone has actually been influenced by the eBay brand, then shown some eBay hospitality, and actually mentioned the brand. Completely, you know, nothing forcing them to do that. How do we keep them interested? The challenge even for us with our Cred Leader program is, how do we keep these 30 people globally interested all the time? They're off doing other things. You can't ring them every day and ask them what they're doing. And that becomes a real challenge to keep the program sustainable. So what we do is we give them early access to what we're doing. The week before we launched Cred Story, I was doing lots of briefings about what it was going to look like and getting their feedback. I was talking with someone else here in the room from a large organization who would love to find people that might be able to help them with new product strategy. Years ago in Australia, I worked in a product development role where we used traditional market research to find out what we already knew. Imagine if you could find some influencers that really loved your product, your company, and your brand, and were prepared to give you free market research. Never underestimate the power of, hi, it's Andrew Grill here from Microsoft. Wow. First time it happened to me and someone said, I read your blog, I was incredibly flattered. I don't get any money for writing my blog. It's a labor of love. For some big company to admit that they read it was incredibly flattering. And it means that, you know, you have some influence somewhere as well. How do we reward them? You give them stuff. You give them early access to things. You treat them well. And I often hear that, you know, we've got to treat journalists this way and bloggers and influencers the other way. Mix them together. Giving a blogger or a key influencer the same access you're giving journalists on a preview could be incredibly powerful. The challenge is you might pee off the journalists because they're saying, what are these scummy bloggers doing here? We're the official hacks. We should get all this. It's a new world. You saw that Kim Kardashian tweet that was featured in the Daily Mail. What's happening is that, surprise, surprise, some journalists are a bit lazy. So they trawl the internet, Twitter, to find out what's going on, and if something bubbles up, they'll write about it. And I've got mates who are journalists, and they tell me, if you've got a lead, DM me first. I was actually at Heathrow a few weeks before the Olympics, and guess what? I was in a two-hour queue, and I took some photographs. They ended up in the Daily Telegraph. Why? Because my mate wanted the exclusive. So how do you reward people? This is what we do, for example. We allow them to get what we call Cred Rewards, and we can send great stuff to them. It can be digital, it can be physical. People obviously will unwrap the box and go, wow, a pair of Sol Public headphones. These are great, you hope. And finally, just looking at where influence and CRM can play, I think this is the really interesting area for me personally as well. So we've just launched a CRM plugin for Salesforce, and what they're doing here is actually ranking people that have got complaints or cases open to say, is this person influential in a specific space? But what you can also do in the marketing suite is say, has this person mentioned someone else in the last few weeks? So if I'm trying to influence Neville in an organization and I see he's been talking to Andy, then maybe there's some link where I can actually use the influence to actually get to them as well. So I think knowing more about people and where they influence and what they do online is going to be incredibly powerful. We're also looking at internal cred. So programs like Yammer and Chatter, that is an internal version of Twitter, we've had approaches to say, wouldn't it be great if you could take a private stream of my company Yammer feed and make sense of it? And the use case would be, I'm a consultant, I'm sitting in my desk at night, and I know I've got my big presentation tomorrow on QR codes. Who in the organization globally is the go-to guy or gal on QR codes? Now, on the internal directory, it probably doesn't say what my specialty is. But imagine if by looking at the Yammer feed through Cred, it said, again, Neville is the man to go to on mobile and QR codes, and he's actually working in our Singapore office, and I can get hold of him. Imagine the time it's going to save. We've been having discussions about this, and I think the internal use of influence that you may never see as a consumer, but actually helps drive the enterprise, is incredibly powerful. And it then isn't really influence. It's almost, who is the go-to person? Who has real expertise inside the organization? We've actually got 8 minutes to go. I finished early, but this is a really interesting space. It's not just about the number. It's what you do with the number and being armed with what it makes, what it actually means to have that number in front of you. Thanks very much. And I assume we've got time for questions.
Yes, we do. So, any questions for Andrew?
Thomas Power has a question, and he is the top outreacher. Very nice. And look at that. Thank you very much. You've obviously mentioned me a lot. For the moment, I won't be there all day. I'm now the top influencer in this room. We've ranked the room, and surprise, surprise, you've been talking about me. Thank you. Hopefully positively.
Andrew, the thing you just said about measuring people on Yammer, when is that available?
Ask Yammer to finish talking to their friends at Microsoft. Yeah. And talk to us, and it will happen. We're ready to go.
Okay, thank you.
Question at the back. Can you just wait for the microphone so it gets onto the podcast? And also, your name and where you're from would be great as well.
I'm Andrew, like you, and I'm from Dell. We use Chatter, which is part of the SFDC. I'm giving you hooked up with Salesforce.com. Are you going to do anything with Chatter?
We'd love to. That's the next stage as well. Really, it's about getting, again, the fire hose. So what we've done with Twitter is we've got access to the fire hose. We would need access to the Dell version of the fire hose. Given we're already in Salesforce now, and Mark Benioff actually had a look at our stand in Dreamforce last week, I think they like what they're doing. We actually are being almost having our arms twisted to say, can you get your stuff inside our kit, because it seems to work. So, yeah, any pressure you can apply from your side seems to work. We'd love to do something there, yeah. Andy.
Hi, yeah, Andy Piper.
All the Andrew questions today.
Absolutely. For Andy Piper, I'm actually with VMware now. I was with IBM previously. Just really curious, as an early adopter of Twitter like yourself, I'm spotting all of the changes they're making recently around closing down their API and cutting down on third-party clients. Any thoughts on whether or not that's going to be bad for the Twitter community generally, and also whether you're going to start looking at we've heard about Yammer and Chatter and things. What about app.net and other things like that?
Yeah, and I've just started. Everyone knows what app.net is, app.net. It's an open source competitor in some way to Twitter. I've started using it to see what it's like as well. Cred is an engine. So the moment we have Twitter, we have Facebook. We'd love to have Yammer and Chatter, and we're going to be adding Google Plus and LinkedIn very soon. Basically, if we can get access to that fire hose of information, we'd love to add that. To your question about Twitter, I think in Twitter's defense, they've got to be able to monetize what they're doing. And they recently announced a quadrant of where they would like people to play. If I can draw this in reverse, top right is clients. They would like to show advertising, so don't do a lot of that. The other three areas were social CRM, tick, social analytics, tick, and social influence, the three areas where we're playing. So we're very confident that the areas we're playing and our competitors are playing are growth areas for Twitter. And I think they love people like us and Clout and others using raw tweets and making sense of them. And if it then goes into the enterprise, I think there's a really great use there as well.
Sorry, I agree with that, but don't you think there's a danger that Twitter will get a serious backlash from particularly the early adopters? Admittedly, potentially they're not of any interest in Twitter anymore and thus suffer a bit of a collapse in the future.
Yeah, I think over the years people have started to see the value of Twitter and they push back. I think even Dick Costello the other week said that their communication of the changes maybe could have been done better. So I think they're realizing that there is a real developer community out there. Maybe they should show them a bit more love. We'd love to show them who the influencers are in that community. We could find them for them.
Hi, Andrew. Thanks. It's a fascinating talk as usual. Mark Wilson, by the way. I just wanted to ask, with you taking in more and more feeds into CRED, what does it mean when I, for instance, my Facebook is deliberately a very close community, whereas Twitter, you know, I use all the time.
Yeah.
Is that damaging my influencer scores as you take on more networks and I'm perhaps active in one but not in another?
It comes down to that relevance issue. So if your closed Facebook community is all about social media, and also some of your friends are also on it as well, that will help your social media community score. I don't think it would impact your global score at all. So where CRED works is in two areas. It's the global score, which is my 890 over 8, but also this community score as well is where that's very, very important. But we weight them differently. In fact, on our rules page, it shows you what a Facebook wall post is versus a Twitter follower. We actually have different levels of points to try and balance that up so one doesn't outweigh the other. We've actually been asked to say, can you just click a button to say Twitter only, what's the CRED? Twitter and Facebook, what's the CRED? And we could probably do that as well. But you're right, as you add more, there's a risk of diluting. I think our approach has been, it's not just about one number, it's about the communities you influence. And if you're strong on one, it'll show. Puffles? I'm taking the question for Puffles, sorry, not from you. Ever met Puffles, by the way? He was at my last talk and he was tweeted, Puffles2010 on Twitter. Always very insightful question.
Anthony Carpen, who's Puffles' bestest buddy on Twitter. Andrew, I just wanted to pick up on a couple of points that you and several other people and the other speakers have made on, shall we say, the culture around social media. Mm-hmm. The impression I'm getting with Twitter is that they want to really monetize everything that they do, in particular on the back of the investment from that Saudi billionaire. But the mindset of the advertisers that they're going to still feels like it's about getting our message out to the people, to potential customers, in a very spammy, untargeted way, rather than trying to engage in a genuine conversation and listening to what customers are saying. Given the company that you work for and your competitors, what risks do they hold for your business model if, for example, people decide to leave Twitter in droves because they decide to throw out more targeted advertising tweets?
That is a really good question. And a broader question is, why haven't we pivoted yet and why are people still in an advertising mindset? And I could talk for a whole day on that, and I'll talk for about 45 seconds in a moment. I think it's unfair just to pick on Twitter, because Facebook will have a backlash, Instagram, they all will. So for us, it's about diversification. So let's just not just have Twitter, let's have the other networks as well, the internal internet. That will help that. I think to your point, though, and we've kind of brought it up today, is that I did it with my first slide. We're all very used to having very eloquent conversations with human beings. When we go back to our desk, we then go into marketer mode. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I haven't done a blog post on this yet. I think it is a generational thing. I'm 44 next month. I'm kind of from the old school. I was born in the 60s. I think people 5 or 10 years older than me that control the budgets are terrified about social media, but are so close to retirement age or new jobs, it doesn't matter. The challenge will be when people my age or younger come up to those levels and are in positions of authority with the budgets, they will be saying, of course it's an integrated campaign. Part of the problem at the moment is that TV sells. And unfortunately, until marketers are able to unshackle from that and the whole ROI thing comes in, it will be a reach and frequency, a broadcast model. Now, Twitter, in their defense, have to go down that route because that is where the money is. And I don't, for a moment, think what they're doing is wrong per se. I think it shows the whole industry is yet to grow up and that it is all about broadcast. When you're out there at lunchtime having that discussion, I dare one of you to behave like an advertiser and someone will punch you in the face if you go up and market to them with an ad. It's about a conversation. But the problem with the conversation model is it takes time. There's no direct ROI, and it takes a truckload of people to manage that, and we're not programmed to communicate when we're at our desks. That is a fundamental change. I think, though, companies that are doing well are saying, let's actually start investing in this space, CRM, etc. Let's understand what they're saying about us. Let's find the influencers. Let's use all of this to start to pivot our marketing strategy somewhat without throwing out TV. But what has to happen in the boardrooms of all... Here's, again, another blog post. If I had my dream job, I would be flown around the world to infect, and I use that word deliberately, the board, the top 1,000 companies about why they should do digital and social in a different way. And every single conversation will be different, And every single conversation would we can't do that. Yes, you can. Something as boring as car insurance. Remember, compare the meerkat? Quick 20 seconds on that. That came about because it was very expensive to buy the word market on Google. It was very cheap to buy the word meerkat. And to the client's credit, this was VCCP who did it some years ago, the client said it was so crazy it might just work. So something as boring as car insurance now has a social presence. So you always get pushback about this, but I believe that unless the market changes, the other thought I have in the last minute I've got is that back in 2007 when I joined Twitter, it was for the cool kids. And we wanted to be taken seriously. In 2012, we are taken seriously. People are spending big bucks to buy tweets and follow tweets. So the cool kids from 2007 are going, we actually achieved what we wanted. We've gone so far that now they're kind of taking over the social element of social media. It will balance. It will balance. Long answer.
Andrew, Shirley Ayres from Disruptive
Social
Care. Hi, Shirley.
Always good to see you.
You too. A question about the categories that are used by CRED. Mm-hmm. They still feel very restrictive, and I wonder what plans you have to extend them out.
So they're deliberately broad because they have to be because they're global. When we work with an organization or a company, we will actually micro-target them. So I'd be delighted to, and we talked about this, building one for your community. So is it about aged care in the UK and all those sort of things? We could build communities like that, and that's where we make our money. So half of me says, let's do 1,000 communities because people want them. The other half of me says, let's make some money and actually go to someone and create these targeted communities. So we could have, just as this shows, we actually, in a very broad way, we have a B2B huddle community right here, which we've actually found. Very lazy way of doing it. But we could actually have a very, very tight community and look within there, and that's what we do for clients. So for non-for-profit, we'd love to do something with you, but that's what we can do in micro-target communities. I have time for what? Another question or two?
Hi, Andrew. Bernie. With the Intercontinental Hotel example, I worry that people were, brands like that are getting the wrong end of the stick with influence and clout and stuff like that. And there's a couple of podcasts that I listen to. And Digital Blonde had a Virgin Train story, how she got tapped on the shoulder. And then Mitch Joel said, well, actually, I don't think that's as good as you think it is because people panic in those companies, so they spend more. You can get an answer from, I mean, I love Vodafone too, really quick response. I'd only ever go to Vodafone on Twitter, but I don't really complain to them because I understand how all this works, and it's just quicker for me to do that rather than being reactive. So, I know, uneducated brands, for want of a better term, or less experienced brands, reacting to stuff on Twitter. So they sort of put a lot of resource over there, but they're not really help, you know, other people lose out or they're not being as efficient as they think, and I think they got the wrong end of the stick. So, comment on that?
It's called real life, that those that know how to do stuff will get the and then what happens, it normalizes. So, if you know the right door to go through, or you know the right button to push, you know the right phone number to ring, and you get something, you'll keep doing that. I don't think it's any different. And unfortunately, there are some brands that really get it and will really win out of that. The others will sit back and watch. There is probably not a company in the world that does not have a website today. 12 years ago, I was in meetings where they said, do we really need a website? Now it's kind of, do we really need a social media strategy? Well, we kind of know how the story ends because 12 years ago to today, we know what happens. So, yes, there'll always be brands that are left behind, but those that are smart enough and have some sort of memory will realize this happened 12 years ago with the web and websites. And it will equalize and normalize. Eventually, Vodafone will become so overrun with people like me and you and everyone in the room tweeting them. But here's what's happened. BT, good example, at BT Care, they have 3,000 customer care people in the UK, of which 25 are on Twitter. What they've found, though, is that the complaints from people like Neville and you and I on at BT Care has actually driven down the global call volumes because it's being handled by specialists within the team. So they've actually seen a reduction in call volumes. You're right that people like you and I that know how to do it can get our problems resolved. That will eventually normalize because, you know what, people will not stop using the phone. Just as TV hasn't killed cinema or newspaper, it will integrate. But you're right, the brands are scared, and one of my favourite brands, a high street retailer, I remember the very first meeting we had, they took 40 minutes to decide how to respond to one forum post. And for me, that was incredibly refreshing to say there are brands out there that are at the very beginning of this journey, and they need help. So before I die, I want to infect all those 1,000 companies to say this is what you need to do. You need to be scared, you need to be doing this. There's no right answer, but it's like real life. Social media is like real life. There are people that do very well out of it. There are people that get left behind. And it starts to normalize.
Andrew, thank you. Ron, if you can please join me in thanking Andrew for sharing his insights.
You've been listening to an FIR Speakers and Speeches podcast, brought to you in association with Lawrence Reagan Communications, serving communicators worldwide for more than 35 years. Information is available at www.reagan.com. FIR Speakers and Speeches is one of the four immediate release series of business podcasts presented by Neville Hobson and Shel Holtz. The anchor podcast in the series is the Hobson and Holtz Report, presented since January 2005. For information about FIR, to see show notes for the podcasts, and to subscribe to any of the podcasts, visit www.4immediatereleases.biz. You can also subscribe via iTunes and other podcast directories. If you have any comments about this podcast or would like to suggest other topics for future podcasts, please email us at FIRcomments@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.